The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
Good morning. Very welcome back to the 9 till noon show. Just to let you know, tomorrow we are broadcasting live this programme from Letterkenny's Main Street. We'll be broadcasting at the launch of the Letterkenny Music Festival, which is also in conjunction with Letterkenny's first Pride Festival. Both committees have a jam-packed weekend of music and fun for everyone, taking place this Friday, Saturday and Sunday in and around the Main Street of Letterkenny. So it'll be, for the most part, business as usual in terms of our Friday panel. We'll be assembled, as always. But after that, we'll have loads of chat and some music for you as well. And if you're down the Main Street, give us a thumbs up, say hello. That's in Letterkenny. I'll remind you of that a little later on again in the show. All right, let's talk now to some of your comments now. And I travelled to Limerick and back last week and only saw one Garda. That was on the journey down. No checkpoints either. The government are fooling themselves if they think criminal elements are not taking advantage of this vacuum. And they're taking advantage of the vacuum as well in terms of movement and distribution of drugs off our coastal waters. You can be sure of that. No shortage of a Garda presence in Buncrana. Two patrol cars, a van, a motorbike and an unmarked special branch vehicle cruising around during daytime hours. Not as visible on weekends. Management of resources is part of the issue. Of course, you have, don't you, a 24-hour station there. But if you're in Mallon or somewhere else. Also want to say that, Greg, are we a step closer to having Jim McGuinness back as Donegal manager? Please let the county board see sense and make it happen if we are ever to win Sam again. Well, what do you all think about that? Are we talking about that later, Caroline? Are we? Yeah, maybe, yes. Okay, well, anyway, we can talk about it amongst ourselves. Would you like to see Jim McGuinness back? What do you think he could achieve over what period of time? There's a lot of speculation out there today, the Irish Independent and some of the local papers speculating, and here in Highland, of course, that Jim McGuinness is about to return again as manager of Donegal. So, A, would you welcome that? B, what would your expectations be? What might we win? And C, over what period of time might it take? You know, lots of you out there have a really good knowledge of the players that are available, the experienced players, the new players, players in your clubs and what have you. So what would you like to see? Do you welcome Jim back if he were to come back? What would your expectations be? Do you believe the talent is there for him to deliver a semi-final or a final again? 086 60 25,000, WhatsApps and texts to that number, or give us a call on 074 91 25,000. Good morning, Greg. Another low for McGill Summer School. Ukrainian citizens trying to rile support for war when it should be peace. Leader put out a video condemning the drinking and partying that's going on in Ukraine, so it seems pretty safe for her and her kids to go back. Well, I know the videos that you're talking of because I know the accounts that are sharing them. Ukraine is a very big country and, of course, people are going to get together and socialise and have a party. But that doesn't mean that a missile won't hit that venue or elsewhere at any given time. I would suggest, you know what, it would be good. And an education, and it may not change your point of view, is, and there's Ukrainians in every community now in Donegal, is to speak to Ukrainians and ask them and say, look, what's it like? Why are you here? Why can't you move back? There are mothers here with three or four children and they're here. Well, I would do the exact same because they don't know when a missile might strike Kyiv or another city or a village, or a drone might explode at the house and wipe their kids out. I think I would do the exact same. I would get my children and I would leave as best as I could. But obviously there are those here that want to make out that it's party time in Ukraine and they're only over here for the crack. But it would be great, I think, if people spoke to some Ukrainian people. Maybe it might change your view. Maybe it won't. Maybe you might say, you know what, everything I said was correct. But engage with people, have a chat to them, see why they're here, what they're escaping from, why they feel they can't go home, rather than relying on some Twitter or Facebook account that their pinned post will be looking for you to make donations to them, rather than relying on them for information, or me for information, or anyone for the information for that matter. Speak to them. That's what I do. I speak to people and sort of go, right, okay, well, I heard that, but what's the truth, or what's your view? And it can be really quite enlightening. Or, as I say, you might go, I was right all along. That fella or that woman who said that and posted that video and framed it the way they did were spot on. Last Monday, I attended LUH with heart problems. The ambulance and hospital staff were brilliant and treated me so well. Sadly, the work in terrible conditions. I was totally shocked. The corridors were packed tight with patients needing beds. Why can't we have more beds in our hospital? A big thank you to all the staff. Well, the problem is, and you mentioned them in the last word of the text, staff. I mean, they can put a million beds in there. we wouldn't fit them, but you know what I mean. It's about staffing those beds. And also, too, you have to have the consultants that are there to treat people and see people, and they have to be working at certain hours for that to be facilitated. It's more than just beds. It's a whole catalogue of issues that need to be addressed there. How come credit unions or banks won't lend money to someone in debt who's unemployed, not looking for a loan for nothing, willing to pay back over a long period? Loan shock's not the answer. Nothing or no one to help. And that's a problem some people might find themselves in, having taken money that they don't have out of their Bank of Ireland account, in that that can have long-term ramifications for your credit rating. But it's difficult, you know. There aren't many lenders that will lend to someone who is unemployed, or with a poor credit rating, for right or for wrong. Right, Paul McLaughlin, our gardener, is in studio later this morning taking your gardening questions. There's a few more of those items to come, but not too many as we edge closer towards the end of the summer. I don't know, there's going to be a mixture of tears and joy. Schools begin to return next week, is it? Is it next week? It would be next week or the week. Yeah, the next week or the week after. Some people will be delighted. Others, and I think we know the others, will be dreading it. But anyway, what am I on about? Yeah, Paul McLaughlin, he's our gardener. He's in studio later this morning taking all your gardening questions. So towards the end of summer, though, the good weather may continue well into September, or may arrive in September, who's to say? But you know yourself, all the usual questions. Okay, 086 60 25,000, that's the WhatsApp and text number. Okay, we cross now to beautiful Glenties, where our own Michaela Clark from our newsroom, of course, is covering McGill Summer School. Yesterday was the first day, Michaela. What stood out for you?
Yeah, yesterday was the first day. So it was all about the war in Ukraine, and the Ukrainian ambassador to Ireland opened the summer school. And then we had three children and two parents speak about their experience in Donegal. It was lovely. And then they sang their national anthem and then the Irish national anthem. It was just lovely. And the crowd and everything got involved. But I really enjoyed the panel discussion at the end. So there was Dr. Sergei Medvedev. So he's Russian, but he moved out of Russia when the Ukraine war broke out. But he was talking about how Russians, they don't really, like, they've no vision for the end of the war. They don't really have an opinion on it. So it was great to see his point of view and what, like, he was kind of given the view of what Russians' view on it is. So he was really good, but he says, like, they were kind of discussing what will bring about the end of the war, and he says that Putin's treating it as World War III, so there does need to be this global response to bring an end to it.
So this panel discussion was framed, though, from a Ukrainian stroke Western perspective, was it? In other words, the solution to this is Russia's complete withdrawal from Ukraine. That was how this was framed, was it? Or was there alternative voices there sort of maybe putting across a Russian perspective?
Well, the question was, how and when will the war end? So there was Dr. Sergei Medvedev, and then there was Olena Tregub. So she is Ukrainian, and she flew in from Ukraine. And then there was a lady, Jade McGlynn, so she's a scholar and author, and she's also the advisor to the British Labour Party. So she was given her view as well of how she visited Kyiv, and then she came back, and the gravity of what was happening on the ground wasn't being reflected in the discussions. Like, she was saying, we need to do this to support them. But kind of the British government was just like, oh, I don't know about that, where they were saying all Western countries need to respond, that there's not enough response at all.
Yeah, and from the earlier in the day, their Ukrainian voices talking about living here and the wish to return home when it's safe to do so. Did they explain why they came here? Talk to us a little bit about the story they were telling.
So the Ukrainian ambassador, she kind of started it, and she was saying that... she said, obviously, for safety, they came here, and she was so thankful to everybody in Ireland for taking in so many people. And then the children got up to speak, and they said that they were enjoying life here. But there was one fella, Andrew, and he says that he'd seen, like, the bombs hitting, and he described it, he was only a small child, that it was the darkest day. And it was so sad, like, that perspective. But he says, you know, he goes for walks around lakes here and stuff, but that he does hope to return home. But they do seem to be, you know, they're in school here and they've integrated so well. But then the talk kind of shifted to later in the evening that we don't know when the end is and when they're going to return home.
Yeah. The focus today is on the role of China, particularly, well, their place in the world, presumably, but in terms of the important role they'll play as, I mean, they have an interesting relationship, of course, because they presume not to take a position on the war, but they are seen as being pro-Russian. And in fact, they've used the war to strengthen ties, the important awful lot of the oil and gas that's no longer going into Europe and what have you. So China are benefiting from this situation. But be that as it may, they also, it's in their interest for world peace as well. And they don't want to see a third world war in the true sense of the word, i.e. Nuclear. So the focus today is on, well, you tell us, China's certainly role, but there's more to it than that as well.
Yeah, so it starts off with China, and then after launch, it's the European Union. It's a panel discussion on how their mission's difficult and complex to be fulfilled. So EU Commissioner Maria McGuinness will be there, as well as two others in that panel. And then there is later on actually a GAA exhibition match between Niamh Connell and Notre Dame GAA. So they're in the Summer Schools Delivering Association with them. So some of them students were here yesterday. So that'll be interesting. Mm. And then the annual John Hume Lecture finishes at then.
And that is
Brendan Boyle.
Brendan Boyle, of course. What is your sense of is this, I think you mentioned yesterday, your first time down there. Mm-hmm. It is kind of a unique event to certainly be there in person. What have you, what is your sort of assessment of it?
Yeah, it is good. I've always been interested in the topics, and it was actually good yesterday seeing so many. Obviously, they were interested, Ukrainians here, but there was a lot of young people here too. A lot of young Ukrainian people, whereas the other crowd was kind of older, but it was busy. The whole place was packed. So there was a great turnout. And, you know, there was complete silence. Everybody was very interested in what was happening.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, obviously, Michaela, as well as speaking to us here, is filing for the news team. So you can hear reports throughout the course of the day on the hour. But also this year, which is different, there is Michaela's McGill Summer School blog. Now, you can see that in our featured section of the website, and it's also posted in the news section as well, so you won't miss it. And it's pinned at the top of our social media. And the idea being, Michaela, obviously you're reporting on the news down there, but for people who maybe can't make it or are interested in it, you know, you get a sense of what's going on there, the commentary, some of the pictures and all that kind of stuff too. So we were looking through it earlier, and it's a great piece of work, and it keeps people in touch if they're interested there.
Yeah, because we don't get everything across in the news, so it's nice. There's lots of snippets of pieces there.
All right, great stuff. Thanks, Michaela. Bye. We'll hear from you and chat to you a little later on, of course, throughout the course of the day on the hour through our news team. That's Michaela Clark, our reporter there, live from McGill Summer School. Shirin Iralia should stand down from her position in RTE. She single-handedly thwarted the investigation by PAC by requesting and accepting the resignation of Dee Forbes. By affording the former DG a get-out clause, she ensured that we would never get the truth. But either by accident or this call might say design. I'm sure Shirin says it's by accident. But that's the question I was putting to the deputy a little earlier on, and also to, you can be too sick to appear before one of these committees in perpetuity, because you could argue that in doing so it would worsen your physical or mental health. So really, you could get a doctor's note never to attend, even if you were compelled to do so. A caller says, when are people going to realise the institutions of this country are rotten to the core? The government, RTE, the HSE, and so on, they say. Okay, thank you very much for that. We were talking to, over the course of this week, about dogs, people's different experiences with dogs. We heard from Michael McClafferty yesterday, his shocking, he's a councillor, of course, his shocking experience of being attacked by a dog earlier on in the week too. A woman's little dog was attacked by a German shepherd, and it's generally brought up the conversation of dogs, hasn't it? Hi, Greg. I meet a lady most days when I walk the forest with five dogs running loose. I said a few times dogs should be on leads. She said I can hardly manage five leads. And the same story, they'll not touch you until they do touch you. My mother was knocked down by a dog on the beach at Farn. That was 5 months ago, and she's still on crutches. It was a terrible accident, and we don't blame the dog or the owner. Okay. Generally, it's not the dog that's the problem, but it's the owner, in my opinion, of course. Yeah, I would agree with that. Greg, if one or more dog owners say to me, as I stand terrified of the dogs, he's a pet, he won't touch you, or he's a pup as he's climbing all over me and I'm screaming in fear, just keep your dog to yourself, they say. Hi, Greg. My son used to be terrified of dogs as a toddler too. He screamed if they came anywhere near him. We got him a pup, and after that, he was fine. Loves dogs now. Great suggestion. I don't want to get a pup. But yeah, okay, thank you for that. I'm really afraid of dogs. I try and be brave if I have to walk past dogs. I do hate when dog owners tell you, don't worry, he won't touch you. Then once the dog bites you, the owner says, oh, they have never done that before. Yeah, it only takes the one first time. And also, too, some people have, and it put you off walking. Some people have dogs, big dogs, that have collars that means they won't go past the boundary of their property. Which is fine, so they won't come out onto the road when you're walking and attack you. But what you do see is they'll run to the boundary, barking their heads off, and you don't know that they can't get out until such time as you do know. And whilst that might seem on the face of it as responsible dog ownership, there are people then that will choose not to walk past that house because they fear these dogs running to the gate, barking ferociously, may one day ignore the collar or not have it on and jump over and attack. All right, we're going to be speaking to a resident of the Tops in Raphoe. There is a massive crater in the road. Well, the road's gone, really. So the crater is the gap between where the road begins and ends and begins and ends on the other side. We're going to talk about that. Okay, now we're speaking to Seamus Lafferty, who lives at the Tops in Raphoe. You might remember the terrible floods on the 23rd of July. Pretty much in terms of forecasting, came out of nowhere. There was extensive damage done, not least to a section of road which seems effectively collapsed and was washed away. Now, it's an important road that's used by a lot of people, which means that farmers and people generally trying to get about their business are facing long detours. Seamus Lafferty, good morning to you, Seamus.
Good morning, mate.
The road didn't survive the floods, or did it collapse after the floods, or what's the story, Seamus?
Oh, just today the floods collapsed.
And it's been gone since? It's not there now at all?
That's 4 weeks this Saturday since the road was closed.
Now what?
And Greg, there are businesses on that road, there are man with lorries, and they can't get in or out.
And what?
Because the road that they want to send him as... That's no, Donkey Kirk Road.
Yeah.
And the farmers can't cut the hedges because they're not allowed to. And they're growing out in the road. Yeah, that's a danger.
Now, you live close to Raphoe. If you need to go and pick up a loaf of bread or something, you have to go around the houses to get there. You have to go on a detour.
A detour? Well, one road's 10 kilometres, another road's 7 kilometres. The road of 7 kilometres is dangerous. With bad bends, and you don't know who you're meeting, because there another local farmer had to draw cities around 10 kilometres to get a half a kilometre.
Wow. What are the council telling you, Seamus?
I rang the council 10 days ago, and the engineers rang me back and never bothered.
Because I presume
the whole
you thought...
bureaucracy and red tape. Greg.
Yeah, because I presume you all thought that, right, this road's gone, this is going to be restored as soon as possible, yet 4 weeks on, the gap still is there, the crater is still there.
Greg, the actual pipe that's on the road is still working.
Mm.
The water is running through it. All we need is a winnow load of stones to fill the hole. And if they haven't the money to do it, fill the hole in the meantime till they get the money gathered up, wherever they get it out of, as they start spending... finished money, they would have it, but whatever.
But anyway, local residents have had enough. The thing is, it's a crater, right, and it's deep, but engineering-wise, this is not a big job to repair, Seamus.
No, it's not a big job to repair. Definitely not. And Greg, if a man's cattle broke out in the middle of the night, they had dark, then cattle would be killed. Because you can't put blinkers on a beast.
Yeah.
You know, they'd whack under the hole, they'd be gone, they'd be dead.
Yeah, okay. You're saying enough is enough now. You gave the council a month. Yeah, okay.
If they can't fill it in, throw us out the stuff and we'll send you the fill.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it has to be filled. It just has to be filled. One way or another, it has to be filled.
Right, okay. As I say, I think you get two good people at that, they'd have it done in a couple of hours.
A couple of hours. Yeah. A link box and a couple of load of stones and the whole thing would be filled. And if they want to dig it out later, dig it out and close the road for a couple of days till they get it fixed, right?
Mm.
There's no problem with it.
But right.
Keeping the road closed for 4 weeks now this Saturday is unbelievable.
Yeah, it wouldn't happen. I mean, like, I'm sorry to make this, I'm sorry to say this, right, but I have to say it because it's true. If this was a road in Letterkenny, it would be fixed long before now.
It would be fixed the next morning.
That's just the fact, Seamus. Like, as I say, I'm not having a go at anyone, but this, there is no way a road in Letterkenny would be closed for 4 weeks if it was so
easy
to fix. It just wouldn't happen.
That wouldn't happen. And the whole thing's down to bureaucracy and red tape. That's what it's down to.
Mm, okay.
Throw us out. We're out in the country. Forget about us. Them boys are all right. They're not thinking on the businesses and everything else.
Yeah.
Like that man has to probably pay another man to pack his lorries and a site. That's all down to cost. Cost. The man's robbed by diesel, the price they had at the minute.
Yep. And the farmers too, and the farmers drawing
and the farmers as well.
Yep. All right.
The man has to go his cattle down below my house. He has to go 10 miles or 10 kilometres round up to bring them in one day there to get them tested. I employ a lorry man with a cattle lorry to bring them in to go round because they couldn't whack them up.
Right,
there's no way across.
Well, listen, Seamus. Hopefully the council are listening. Hopefully they get out today and sort this out. And if they do, and fair play to them if they can, if it's possible, we'll celebrate that and we'll give it as equal prominence tomorrow and say, well, listen, fair play to the council. They listen to the people and they've sorted this out. Fingers crossed. They're normally pretty good. And hopefully now they can cut through a little bit of this red tape and get this road open for locals. Because as I say, and I'm sorry, if it was on the approach to Buncrana or if it was on the approach to Letterkenny or to Donegal Town, it would be fixed long before. Now, one can't help but feel that's the case, and the people of Revo deserve the same treatment. So hopefully now they get out there while the weather's nice and dry and get that sorted for you, Seamus.
Thanks, Greg.
Take care, all right. And as I say, it's good people in the council, and if they can, they will. I've no doubt about that. And as I say, more than happy to... give lots of positive publicity if they manage to do that too, if that matters. But just to, in other words, not just forget about it. Good morning, Greg. I'd be interested to know what Patrick McGill would think of his namesake being used in Glenty's summer school, given our government's current agenda in the war. Should Ireland not be putting out a more balanced opinion or even a call for humanity and peace with the history of struggle in this country? Surely we are well positioned to comment on this honestly. Another, why are Bank of Ireland ATM machines being replaced by Euronet? Who are Euronet? You cannot get your balance or pay in a cheque at this machine. I don't know. I presume you're not on about Bank of Ireland ATMs at Bank of Ireland. There is a company, Euronet is that company, and there are others. We discussed it on this show, I don't know how long ago, years and years ago. They got a contract or something or other. You'll know if you use a cash machine on the Strip in Portugal. That it will, you'll be charged £2 or something like that, £4. I don't know what it is. It's that long since I've been there, but you will be charged to withdraw money. And there was a fear at that time that as we see more of these cash machines pop up in this country, that could be the norm here. I can't remember the exact details of who they took over or how that's working. Can dig it out, but you're probably going to see more of them. Right, okay, more comments actually we can go to. Hi, Greg and team. Just wondering, is it possible to get Donegal County Council to give an update in relation to the enhanced scheme when they expect the transitions to be completed? We are on the priority list to transition to the enhanced scheme, but it has been 6 weeks since the scheme opened. We submitted our request for information, which was requested on the 31st of July on the same day, and I've had no response from them. I called DCC today to be told it was with the technical team and no date can be given as to when it would be processed. The opinion is that DCC are doing all they can, but yet we've been waiting so long. The delays are costing the homeowner just further anguish for homeowners, and it's not good enough. And we certainly can attempt to get an update or an answer to that question at the very least. But I think the Donegal County Council have their own frustrations with this new system in that they're dealing with another body as well, and the council have a reduced role in it, albeit an admin role, and they've got a lot of balls in the air. So, as I say, if we can get some sort of an update for you, we certainly will. It would be great to see Jim McGuinness back as the county manager. I think the team needs someone like him to pull them into shape. The players certainly wouldn't be dictating to him like they did with Paddy Carr, but people would need to be patient and allow him time to build the team up again and not expect to win the All-Ireland after a year or two. And that's it. And the last time he went in, wasn't it, with a three-year plan? I believe it was. And I think any management team, be it Jim McGuinness or other, are going to have to be given space to build to where they want to be. We shall see. We shall see. It's not always the best thing to do to go back. You'll know that in different parts of life. Sometimes it doesn't work out too well. People fed up financing Ukrainians and all the do-gooders be better looking after their own. If Tobarty was on the dole, it'd be like, ah, sure, pay us back a fiver a week. We're that confident in our job security. Another, I hope the story's out today that Jim McGuinness return a true. He's the top man to bring Donegal to future glory. Hi, Greg. Hello, Mac and T. 10 million being spent on the Bank of Ireland. There was 10 million being spent on policing in Dublin. I'm not sure about the Bank of Ireland. I'll have to check into that. Greg spoke to a Ukrainian. This was exactly what they said. Your country is so kind. We get so much and don't have to work. Never get this at home. Okay, well, that was your experience, but at least you engaged with them. Is McGill putting the other side of the debate on the war in Ukraine? A recent survey of the Ukraine community said 60% of them would not return home after the war. Another, well, yeah, okay. My son was knocked down by a goat on the beach in Bundoran. Well, that's pretty random, isn't it? I kid you not. It happened, according to that listener. Right, 086 60 25,000 if you want to WhatsApp or text us, or give us a call on 074 91 25,000. Greg, dogs are a major problem on beaches. I had a confrontation with two people on a beach a few weeks ago. Their dog insisted on running at us. When I asked them to supervise their dog, she said, they're fine, they won't touch you. I'm afraid of dogs. I told them their dog should be on leads, and they ended up being very rude to us and said dogs didn't have to be on leads and that I should learn to respect dogs. Well, okay, well, how do you compete with that? It's very difficult. Moira Toner is Donegal Engineering Network Executive and Donegal Food Coast Advisor at Donegal Enterprise. Good morning to you, Moira.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
Good. It's great to have you on the programme. Right, OK. So there is a course out there now for those who might be thinking of starting a food business. Why this? Why now?
Well, it's actually something that we run twice a year. And it's to basically help our food producers grow their businesses. So it'll give them a great insight as to the do's and don'ts of running a food business. We have an expert food marketing, a food marketing expert called Connor Hyde from Bullseye Food Marketing, who will facilitate the program. And he will give them all the do's and don'ts. He will look at, for example, food market trends and drivers. He'll look at primary market research, packaging, every aspect of food production, legislation, etc. So, as I say, we ran it in March very successfully. We're running it again in September over four mornings.
Right. So it is called the Food Starter Programme. And the objective of the course, according to the press release here, is to provide the participants with a base knowledge of what's involved in setting up a food business. And I suppose to, and not being negative, but for some is that a reality check in that they have an idea and through this process they might say, well, maybe now is not the right time for what exactly I'm planning, or they refine their plans. In other words, is there that level of encouragement and support and maybe reality check too?
Absolutely. Indeed, we had a few participants in our March programme who decided when they realised, you know, it's not just a matter of producing a product and a high quality product, but there's lots of other aspects to it as well. And indeed, some of them, having attended our course, realised, you know what, I'm not prepared for this. This was merely a hobby for me. You know, I don't want to commit to the time involved in producing an artisan product. But then there are others who entirely embraced it, enjoyed the experience, expanded their knowledge greatly. And one of our March participants has now been accepted onto the Super Value Food Academy.
Which is fantastic indeed. Mm-hmm. And as well too, you know, I mean, people might be experts at growing a certain food or cooking a certain food or creating a certain product, But that doesn't mean necessarily that they have the business acumen at that time to sort of commercialize this. So there's help in relation to that about, you know, you can run a business. This is, there are certain, like tax compliance, for an example, you will need a strategy over the next 6 months, 1 year, 2 years, that kind of stuff people can get some help with.
Absolutely. Now, the course does assume that, you know, the participants have some general business knowledge. You know, it won't go into the tax aspect. We have other courses to help them with that, okay. Such as your Start Your Own Business program. This is specifically a food focus. So it is aimed at those who are either thinking of starting their business or those who are in their first 24 months of developing their product or you
indeed.
Know.
So in terms of running a business, you kind of, for this course, would need to know the basics, but there are other courses available as well. Okay, that's good information to have. And it's not
and
also...
just in relation to that, Craig, if I could come in, for those who have the little idea of the seed in the back of their head of, you know, I have this product that I'd be making at home or whatever, or if they're starting to start a food truck or whatever, we have another course on the 30th of August called Thinking of Starting Your Own Food Business.
Brilliant.
And it's on an afternoon of the 30th of August over 3 hours. And that will be led by James Burke, who is also a food expert. So that's for those who have just the idea at the back of their head, whereas the Food Starter Programme is more for those who are a little bit further down the line.
Yes, of course. And this is not always about opening a business as such in terms of, you know, customer facing, because people produce products to offer to third parties to sell.
Exactly, exactly that. And I should say that with the Food Starter Programme, and I mentioned that our facilitator is Connor Hyde, the participants also get 4 hours one-on-one mentoring with Connor after they finish this course. So there are other aspects to it, and there is further support when they've completed the course with a one-on-one mentoring, which is invaluable with Connor Hyde because he has over 20 years of food marketing experience.
Yeah, for sure. Now, and with that experience, you learn what works, and also you learn sometimes what doesn't work as well, which is pitfalls that others can hopefully avoid through Connor's experience. So does that mean numbers are limited then with that commitment of a 4 hour one-on-one with Connor? I mean, it can't be open-ended, I presume.
No, it's not. It's limited. And thank you for asking that. It's limited to 15 participants.
15.
And I should also say that it's open to clients of the local enterprise offices in Leo and Sligo as well. So, you know, we have already got people registered. So if anyone is interested, I'd recommend that they get onto our website straight away. It's localenterprise.ie/Donegal. And register their interest immediately, because once we reach capacity of 15 participants, we will be taking it down and it will be fully booked.
Yeah. Okay. So just in case, and I hope I didn't, but just in case there was any confusion, you must already understand the basics of setting up a business, such as tax compliance rules, creating a business plan, etc. You must already have those tools at your disposal, either very early in your new business or really ready to sort of almost go. That really is the people that you're talking to, isn't it, Maura?
Exactly. That's okay. It. Absolutely.
You talked there about another course just by the chance. If people want to get more details about other courses that are available, not just the two we mentioned, because there are a lot of them, and maybe they're not there now, but they'll be launched into the future shortly, you know, that sort of a way. Where's the best place for people to go? I mean, obviously, you can always ring or email, sorry. You can always email, and the email address actually we'll give out. But how do people stay in touch with the work of Donegal Enterprise and Leo?
So what you should do is go to our website, localenterprise.ie/Donegal, register for our mailing list. We send out very regular MailChimps as to what we're doing and the courses that we offer, the supports we have. Always feel free to pick up the phone. Myself or my colleagues are always at the end of the phone to provide advice on the courses. But there's a full schedule of upcoming events on the training tab on our website.
Yep, okay. And often with our Business Matters podcast, the support of the organisations you've mentioned and others often come into the conversation, and people see them as invaluable. Maura, thank you very much for your time. Maura Toner there, Donegal Engineer, Network Executive and Donegal Food Coast Advisor at Donegal Enterprise. Sharon's watching the show. Good morning, Sharon. She says, Greg, you said, I kid you not, about a person getting knocked over by a goat. Did I? Sorry, Sharon. I want to say good morning to Michael, Paul, John, Annie, Felmy, all watching the show live across our social media. You can do so yourself whenever you like by going on to YouTube, Highland Radio Ireland, on your smart TV or Fire Stick or your tablet, laptop, whatever. And also you can watch us on Facebook, Highland Hub, Highland Radio News and Sport. And there's also a watch live button for you to watch in browser on our website. Evelyn's with us now. Hiya, Evelyn.
How's it going, Greg?
I'm all right. Okay, you're also, are you affected by this missing section of road at the tops?
Yeah, well, I was reared on this road, and now I come out and visit my family. So I have, what Seamus was saying, we have to go around other roads. But it's, we are, Rafoe was meant to be a heritage town.
Yep.
Now, we live on the road heading to the Stone Circle. Now, this is meant to be a heritage part of Rafoe.
Mm-hmm.
So, nobody seems to help to push to get this road sorted out.
Right, so it's for tourist access as well then, as well as the practical stuff we've been talking about already, Evelyn?
Yes, well, Seamus, he's retreating to Seamus Lafferty. Now, mm-hmm. I was heading out the road here, out now with a member of my family, and Seamus come on, I was listening to him. I actually passed three motorbikes.
Wow.
Heading from the Stone Circle.
Is that road suitable? But, because it's not a massive road that's been washed away here now, but so I can only imagine the alternative routes are longer and not as good as the established route.
Yeah, but you imagine you're a foreigner and you come and watching a sat-nav. That's going to bring you out that main road that's bringing you to the Stone Circle,
yeah,
Greg.
Yeah, I get you. Okay.
So, now, I know a relative of my family about a couple of days ago met people and he had to direct them around the other roads.
Mm-hmm.
But I know the council has signs up now, you know, to take these other routes. But I think it's very unfair, especially we're meant to be a heritage town.
Yep, city, somewhat described so as the smallest city in Europe. Yep. Listen, we're appealing to the council to get on this as soon as possible. It's not a big job, Evelyn. If the will is there, it can be done. And as you say, it's not just for practical reasons. Although tourism is practical, don't get me wrong. But you know yourself
what
I'm saying. Yep.
I've been reared out here at the tops.
Okay.
This is my family home.
Mm-hmm.
And like, we've been sitting here, and our house is just before you turn off to go to the Stone Circle. Now, people stop by us. They were all foreigners, buses, people in their own vehicles, you know, stopping at my home, asking for directions.
Yeah.
You know, and it's only down around the corner, and you turn right. Unless you're up to the Stone Circle, you're going to the Department of Agriculture.
I get
That's
you.
Where the Stone Circle is.
Mm-hmm.
So the road is closed on the other side of us.
Yes.
So these people cannot use it as well as ourselves.
Uh-huh. Right, okay. All right, Evelyn. Listen, you've added another strong thread to the argument that this needs to be fixed as soon as is possible.
Yeah.
Thanks for your time.
I think that's why I come on, and Seamus did speak well now, but I don't think that people need to know it's a heritage town. We need help.
Yep. Okay. Well done, Evelyn. You did it. All right. It is good. Thank you so very much indeed. A caller says, fair play to Seamus, well done, a voice for the community. Another, what are the councillors in the area doing about it? I did see some quotes from Councillor Frank McBurty commenting on that. Regarding dogs, 80% of canine aggression is fear-based, meaning the dog is afraid of people, dogs or both. If they're on a lead, they aren't able to run away, so are left with no option to bark in an attempt to make the scary thing go away. That comes in from Andy of Venture Dog Training in Ballybuffet. Well, Andy, maybe we can have a chat with you. Why would emigrants or refugees leave Ireland when they're getting everything for free? Meanwhile, we have another flight of the Euros with our own young people leaving the country in their droves as they can't afford to live here anymore. Yes, they are. And they're emigrating to live in another country where there will be homeless people, where there will be hospital waiting lists, where there will be shortages for GPs. And it's great, and they should be able to do so. And hopefully they're going over and they'll work and contribute. But my point is that immigration is fine if you want to go and experience life. We don't want to see the young people leaving, but they are going somewhere else. They are fleeing Ireland because they don't think it can offer them the future that they need, and going to another country to go and live there and make their life there. There's a little irony in your comment, and I hope you don't think I'm having a go. I'm just teasing it all out here. You're right, Greg. Never go back. Jim got his All-Ireland. Why would he go through all that again? Well, you see, even if he can only ever achieve what he's already achieved, can't he? I just think in this, I actually think this world has changed dramatically since Jim McGuinness was last in charge of Donegal. And I think it'll be interesting to see if he does come back, if he's fully prepared for the analysis, the scrutiny, the online commentary that perhaps wouldn't have been there during his last term. And I know it's not that long ago, but this world has changed and this country has changed drastically since then. I don't know. I hope he's got his eyes open to it anyway, and I'm not for a second discouraging him. I hope Jimmy McGuinness doesn't return to managing Donegal. While we revel in the 2002 All-Ireland victory, he destroyed the game with his blanket defence tactic. Other teams used this to their advantage, but the game's become unwatchable. Thankfully, the old style's returning and Lum may remain so. Can you attribute that really to Jim McGuinness? I don't know. All right, okay. Kevin McKinney is SIPDU representative for Donegal Firefighters. This off the back, we've invited Kevin on off the back of news that industrial action by retained firefighters in a dispute over paying conditions is suspended from midday following talks at the Workplace Relations Commission. Right, we've been here before, Kevin, but what happened at the Workplace Relations Commission that's given rise to this suspension?
Well, good morning, Greg, and to your viewers. The negotiating committee met last night, met yesterday, and talks continued through until probably about 1:30, 1:22 this morning. And there's a document now going to be prepared by the WRC. And the detail of that document, as I'm made aware now at the moment, basically puts more value to the LRC, Labour Court recommendation, that was rejected. And it has to go now back to the members to be balloted on.
One of the proposals is a firefighter on an annual retainer of 8,870 would see it rise to 11,769. Now, on the face of it, that's significant. That's almost a 33% rise. But it doesn't give any certainty in terms of going to apply for a mortgage or being able to sustain a family or having to rely on someone very close to the fire station working with you to allow you to do this job. As I say, on the face of it, it looks like, well, who's going to refuse a 33% increase? But from the firefighters I've been speaking to, that doesn't really improve a lot of the concerns that they had. They'll just quit anyway.
Well, I suppose when you look at 33% of nothing, it's not 33% of nothing. It's not an increase. When you look at what the firefighters receive heretofore, it's 99 cents an hour for their on-call element, for being on call 24/7, 365 days a year, and with minimum time off. And because you can't recruit, it even puts huge pressure on the existing workforce. So 99 cents, that offer put it up to 135. That's the real terms. And when you look at what they get and what they're expected to do, it's not value for money. And when you look at the situation for the last number of years, maybe the last 10, 15 years, the service is no longer fit for purpose. Mm. And when you look at the 2.5 kilometres that people have to reside in, work in, and so forth, and employers now not wishing to let firemen off to attend incidents, that's very, very difficult. And if you look at the fire service as a whole across the country, we can't recruit.
Yeah, the problem is too, like, there's such a head of steam up at the moment. Maybe I'm reading the room wrong. I can't see why firefighters would accept that because, as I say, it doesn't go anywhere near what the ones I've been speaking to need to stay in the business and to retain it because, you know, to retain it as its future. You don't want to, of course, predetermine the outcome of a ballot, but they're hardly going to accept this at this point now after all these weeks of hardship and standing out campaigning. This doesn't go far enough, increasing one's wage from 99 cent to, what, 1.32 per hour?
But that was under the Labour Court recommendation. Yeah. And I think the Labour Court didn't grasp the entire situation.
Do you think retained firefighters will accept this?
This new offer, when you look at the detail of it, it will improve.
Sorry, I beg your pardon. I'm referencing a previous offer. I beg your pardon. My apologies, Kevin.
Yeah.
There's
a new offer.
Go ahead.
There's a new offer on the table as of last night. Both parties have agreed to suspend the strike. The WRC will draw up the document in its entirety. The fire service personnel will be able then to assess it mm-hmm. and look at what does that actually mean for them. And Greg, you have to understand that the fire service is made up of people who are employed, self-employed and unemployed. And it's very difficult for when you look at how do you balance this for three different types of workers
yes.
within the service, and how do you retain them and recruit them? How do you entice people into the service? Well, let's be honest about it. You need a reasonable salary for the work that you do, not to be overpaid,